Good morning. The Special Committee on Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism is called to order. The time is 12:20. Welcome, everyone. And thank you to our LI monitor and also to Debbie, our recording secretary, and to my aide, Ginger Blaisdell. And for the record, we'll call the roll, or I'll just say the roll. So Representative Pete Higgins is here. Representative Hughes, myself, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Drummond. And we may have some coming and going because of the overlap of other committees. And we have two main things we're going to be looking at today, and that is the ARDORs, as well as the a report from the Alaska Minerals Commission. And what I think I'm going to do, which if those come on up to the table. Nicole Grew is she can introduce herself and tell us what her role is. So come on up to the table, Nicole. And would you like Andy and Shelley to join you at this point? We've got chairs for them.
Yes, please.
So Andy and Shelley, if you would like to come. And if you could each introduce yourself. And then I'm going to do something a little bit different because I know we have a lot of ARDORs here in the room. And so I'd like to know what other ARDORs are represented. So I'm going to ask, after they introduce themselves, those of you sitting in the audience that are representing the ARDOR, you could state your name and your ARDOR. So Nicole?
Good morning, Representative Hughes and committee members. My name is Nicole Gruey. I'm the ARDOR Program Coordinator for the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
And I'm Shelley Wright. I'm the Executive Director for Southeast Conference, the ARDOR for Southeast Alaska.
Thank you.
Hey, good morning, Representative Hughes and members of the committee. I'm Andy Barnard, Executive Director of the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference, the ARDOR for the Kodiak, Crystal Bay, and Aleutians regions.
Okay, very good. And the description of the regions, that's helpful that Andy just did. So let's start over on this side.
Brent Smith, Northwest Study Forum Economic Development Director, working for former Representative Jewell, now Mayor Jewell.
Jason Hoke, Executive Director of Copper Valley Development on the ARDOR for the Copper Basin.
Thank you.
John Bittner, Vice President of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation.
Marty McKeever, Executive Director of Metsu Resource Conservation Development, Metsu Valley.
I'm Carl Berger, Executive Director for the Lower Kuskokwim Economic Development Council, Bethel, and 26 Lower Kuskokwim Villages.
Brian Hammond, Director of the Bering Straits Economic Development Council, and Hill.
I'm Carrie Cooey with the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District, covering the Kenai Peninsula.
Sue Coxwell, I'm Director of Prince William Sound Economic Development District.
My name is Vivian Corkey, I work for the Association of Village Council Presidents, and we are assisting to reestablish the Lower Yukon Economic Development Board.
Eric O'Brien, also with Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference.
Also with AGCP, assisting in establishing the Lower Yukon Economic Development Council.
Jeff Jacobson, Kirby Sestroville Economic Development Commission, who represents Interior Alaska.
Hugh Muslick, Nano Regional Corporation, I'm not an ARDOR Economic Development Commission.
Anyone else there representing ARDOR? All right. Well, thank you. That gives us a good, looks like we have a very good representation around the state. So thank you for doing that. And part of the reason that I wanted the committee members to know who was in the room is because after the three at the table present, if you have any particular questions of any of those in the ARDOR, we will invite them up to the table, not to make you all out there nervous, but we may have time to do that. So I wanted of us all to be aware of who was here and be thinking of any questions we might have. And so now I'm going to turn things over to Nicole. If you want to start your presentation, please, Nicole. State your name for the record.
For the record, Nicole Gruey, ARDOR Program Coordinator for the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I've been informed by staff that our time is relatively short here, so I'm not going to do a formal PowerPoint presentation. I do have some talking points here, and I did provide our annual report and also a PDF file of some slides that is a summary of the program and also the annual report and also kind of an overview of my talking points. So I'd like to be brief and also entertaining any questions as I go through the program. So let's see. So the ARDR program, this word ARDR has become part of our vernacular in Alaska language, and it stands for Alaska Regional Development Organization, and then you tack on the word and it's program, ARDR program. But in reality, the state of Alaska has a program that's established via Alaska statute called the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program. And so just to make sure there's no confusion, we're talking about the same program here. A little bit of change in terminology here. But today I was going to share a little bit of the historical perspective of the program, talk about the program in general as it resides with the state of Alaska, talk a bit about the 12 ARDRs that have all joined us today. We happen to be having our annual meeting, our in-person meeting in Juneau today and tomorrow, so this was perfect timing. Thank you for accommodating the schedule. So I'll speak briefly about the 12 ARDRs, a little bit about their revenue and their work plans and their economic development plans or strategies, and then I'm going to conclude by handing it over to two ARDRs here, Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference and Southeast Conference, to share a little bit of their regional perspective and the value of the program to their region. So this year is a really important milestone year. It's a silver jubilee for the program. 25 years ago, in 1988, the 15th Alaska State Legislature established the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program. It was via Senate Bill 480 that was sponsored by the Special Committee on Local and Regional Economic Opportunity, but I would be amiss if I did not mention that the person primarily responsible for the bill was Senator Arlister Jaluski. So to gain some inspiration for today's meeting, I called her yesterday, interviewed her about what happened 25 years ago, and right away she said to me, "You know who I am, don't you?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I'm the founding mother of the ARDR program." And she was literally able to state some of the statutes from 25 years ago that are in place today. So a little bit of inspiration there. So the Alaska statute for the ARDR program generally reads that the ARDR program, as it resides with the state of Alaska, will encourage the formation of regional development organizations to implement economic development strategies. So our charge as a state department is to encourage regional development organizations to form and to take responsibility for economic development planning for the region. We're also to assist in the formation of boundaries for these ARDRs. So these are geographic regions, and these are entities that are conducting economic development planning for that region. Part of that is establishing the regional boundaries, and there are certain guidelines that guide our thoughts on that are established in statute and regulation. The program gathers information about regional economic issues. We assist the organizations with carrying out their responsibility. So we do a lot of capacity building, technical assistance. This is in addition to the grant that we distribute on an annual basis. So the program, in the end, the way it works in a real practical perspective is that we have a state that has 12 regional development organizations. As long as they meet certain eligibility criteria, they are eligible for a non-competitive grant through the state of Alaska every year. So, and they also work closely with the state of Alaska on economic development initiatives. And that's the core of the program. Unlike many state programs, it's small. I'm the only staff to the program, and even at that, it's a fraction of my job. So really, we do as much assistance as we can through the Division of Economic Development and the other staff that we have, but it is not a program that really employs staff. We are a pass-through on the grant, and we provide technical assistance, and it's a lean program.
Nicole, I have a question, and that is, back in 1988, mm-hmm. When it was put in statute, was part of that to leverage federal monies that were available at that time, and have the federal dollars gone down since that time?
Representative Hughes, I'm not familiar with the federal funding that was available at that time. and whether that was part of the motivation for Senate Bill 480. In talking to Senator Sturgalewski yesterday, and just from what I have heard of historical accounts, that there was really a motivation by the legislature to encourage regional entities to form, to encourage economic development planning to be conducted in the region, because local leaders know local challenges and opportunities best and are best suited to organize and mobilize and carry out economic development planning. There is federal funding. Through the years, there's been a lot of federal funding for these organizations, and in fact, many of their revenue streams are predominantly comprised of state and federal revenue, along with private sector and in-kind contributions. And so in the annual report that you all should have access to, there's a little pie chart in each ARDR and what their revenue portfolio looks like. And I'll talk a little bit about them as a group of 12. Federal funding, the characteristics that come along with federal funding differ a bit from the state funding revenue stream as far as the accountability of the ARDR. I mean, we are very small. The ARDR program is small. We have a grant agreement with some deliverables associated with it, but it's quite flexible because we're trying to encourage these regional development organizations to carry out planning in a way that is locally and culturally appropriate to that region. And I think the federal money, and this would be primarily my perspective, comes with quite a bit more limitations.
Okay. You mentioned that part of it was the formation was because local leaders know what's best in their regions. So that makes me wonder what percentage of the Division of Economic Development, what percent of state funding goes to this? Because it sounds like it's very, very, very little, yet we recognize the fact that the local areas would be able to figure out what they need.
Right, so the total revenue, state revenue stream?
The percent from the Division of Economic Development that goes to the ARDR program.
Okay, so you're talking to the I think I know the way you're asking. You kind of asked the question, excuse me, Representative Hughes, the percent of Division of Economic Development revenue that goes to the ARDR program. And I think I'll rephrase a bit that each of the 12 organizations in this room receive about $62,000 a year from the state of Alaska. When you look at all 12 combined, their revenue portfolios, I call it a portfolio, when you look at their revenue, their total value for fiscal year 12 was $5.5 million.
Right. I did see that in the report,
and
I can see it's leveraging other funding. But my question of that state funding, the 62 going to the 12, is that about 750,000, somewhere around there?
Yes.
750,000 is what percent of the Division of Economic Development?
I'm going to refer to my Director Lorene Palmer, Director of Division of Economic Development. If I could, please.
Yes. Come on up, Lorene.
Thank you, Representative Hughes. Lorene Palmer, Division Director for Economic Development. If I understand your question, too, the total budget is about $28 million. That represents the full division's budget. And so if that's what you're looking for, then this $700,000 to $800,000 obviously represents a pretty small piece of that. So what would that – the math on it, I'd have to think about it for a second on what that is, the total percentage of our actual – full division budget. Is that what you're...
Yes, and I'm just making the point that it's a very small percentage, and I wanted the members to be aware of that and to be thinking about that. So thank you.
Thank you.
I also was wondering, you mentioned that there are some deliverables that mm-hmm. are required. Will you be reviewing those with us as you go through your presentation? And as far as those state dollars, and then there are criteria for the federal, and if you could tell us what those are as well, please.
All right, so let me see. So in the state, there are these 12 ARDRs, and in your annual report, you'll see a map of what their general geographic boundaries are. And I would also point your attention to there is a significant part of the state that does not currently have an ARDR, and it would be the Arctic Slope, large expanses of the interior, and an area a little bit north of Bethel, the lower Yukon, sub-region of that larger Southwest Alaska. State statute allows for grants up to 15 organizations, and so my point being is there's much of the state that doesn't currently have an ARDR. There's room for some growth, which I know has been an interest before of certain legislators. Moving from the revenue, so of the fiscal year 12, the total revenue coming into these 12 ARDRs that currently exist is about $5.5 million, of which state revenue is about 19%, but that's the ARDR program with additional grant monies that are going to some of these ARDRs. So the ARDR, the money that is moving from the state of Alaska to these ARDRs under the ARDR program is less than one quarter of their total revenue portfolio. The annual.
I have a question here. The 19% that's coming from the state, some of it is that $750,000, but you said they're also receiving other state grants?
Some of them.
Mm-hmm. Can you give some examples of the kind of other state grants?
Sure. I'm not familiar with all of them, but I'll point to Shelley Wright of Southeast Conference has received some money from the state of Alaska to do some timber development work. And perhaps if we could postpone that, she could respond to that a little bit later.
Okay, thank you.
I would say it's project by project, really. And it can look, the additional state grants, it can look different in each one of these ARDRs.
So. Okay, thank you.
So with the 12 ARDRs, the past 2 years, they each receive about $62,000 from the state of Alaska. And that has slowly gone up over the years. We've seen some dips. There's a trend line chart in your handout if you'd like to take a look. But I think one of the points I'd like to make here is that we have room for growth in ARDRs, but as we add more ARDRs, they share in that same pot of state revenue that the ARDR program revenue. So sometimes there's been dips in these funding streams as we've had more ARDRs incorporate. But the state of Alaska generally over the past 20 years, our, you know, revenue has gone up slowly, sometimes with a dip down if we have a new ARDR incorporate, and then it goes back up. So the deliverables, I'd like to move quickly to deliverables. So state statute, Alaska Administrative Code, and the grant agreement work together on what is actually a deliverable from these ARDRs back to the state of Alaska. So what are you getting for your investment in this program? And really, it boils down to this, and it's quite simple, to develop an economic development plan, a regional economic development plan, to implement the plan, so to carry out activities that are noted in this plan, and to convene a board of directors to provide local leadership or regional leadership for this ARDR. So the leadership component has to be in place. They have to have an economic development plan that has to be updated every 2 years, and they have to carry out activities as guided by the plan. And so the original statutes from 25 years ago to today have really had very, very minimal change, if any. And it really boils down to that these are regional planning organizations that are doing work on behalf of the region to develop these economic development plans and to carry them out, the activities. And, those are the core deliverables for the grant, and the statutes and the administrative code guide the grant agreement.
Are those plans available to the public? Are they online?
Yes, and in fact, the annual report, I see that you have it in hard copy. But if you were to visit the ARDR program website and download an electronic, you can go to that page and click on every one of those images and download that plan. And you can also visit all the ARDR's websites. There's a little two-page program, or there's a little two-page profile of each of the ARDRs. And they're available through me anytime as well. But all the ARDRs have websites, and I would say most of them have their plans up on the website. And if you need one easy place to go, you can visit the state's ARDR program website and click on the images.
But this question might be better for the executive director of the MATSU ARDR, but I noticed that in the report or the PowerPoint, there was an image of a 2006 report for that. Is there a more updated one? So how often are they updated?
They are required to update their plans every 2 years and to submit that plan to the department. And there was an image. I think I know exactly which ARDR, and there is a 2010, a 2012 plan now. But I believe all of them are, today, as I sit here at this desk today, they all have current plans.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, and that really concludes my comments for the ARDR program from the department's perspective. And from here, unless you had further questions about the ARDR program as it resides within the department, I was going to introduce, I speak a little bit about why I chose these two ARDRs to join me at the table.
Well, I do have a few questions, and other members may have some questions as well. As I was going through the report, and I noticed that there was quite a difference in some of those pie charts and in the makeup of the boards. And members, you might want to just glance at some of those where some of them, their main funding was state and federal funding, where other ARDRs, it was just a very small sliver or a moderate-sized sliver, and they leveraged a lot of other funds and private sector funds. And I noticed also that the boards had a different kind of makeup, and a lot of them had a lot more private sector individuals, and that's helpful that the asterisk there to show us that. And I was just wondering if you can talk about some ARDRs seem to be very successful and active, and others it looks like a little bit less is going on. So can you talk about, are there particular ARDRs that the state considers as a good model and particularly successful? And then what do you do as the state when, in the division, when an ARDR isn't particularly successful? Have you ever looked at replacing the executive director, for example, or is that a decision of the board? So if you could talk about successes and failures.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Hughes. Yes, there are 12 ARDRs across the state, and each of the 12 look different. There are rural ARDRs, there are urban ARDRs, and I think by design each of the ARDRs can be a little bit different, because the purpose is that we as a society have regions that can gather together, think collectively, mobilize, develop these economic development plans that best reflect the flavor of the economy and the culture, and then execute these plans. But how that actually happens across the 12 is a little bit different. If you're in urban Alaska and you're able to spend some time at Anchorage Economic Development Council, you'll see that they are very active and out doing economic development in very traditional ways. They're recruiting businesses to the Anchorage Bowl and larger region. They're doing site selection work. You could go down to Kenai Peninsula and see that they have a revolving loan fund and are also carrying out very traditional activities. You travel out to Western Alaska, and the ARDRs look a little bit different. The communities look different. Whether there's a measure of success or non-success as the program manager, I really look at all 12, and I'm asking myself, do you have a board of directors that's meeting regularly? Because that's the starting place of success, that you have regional leaders that are gathering, discussing economic issues, and developing priorities. Is that being executed through staff? And some of these ARDRs have one staff person through the development of economic development plan. What does the plan look like? Not how long or how short it is, but does it have some analysis of social and economic conditions? Does it talk about economic needs? Are the priorities and the strategies, are they applicable to that region? I mean, is it really representative of what's happening there, and are the strategies for trying to resolve economic issues reasonable for that region? And then I look at the activities. So what have they done in the past year? What activities have they carried out to increase economic opportunity for that region? And that looks very different from the 12 across the state. I have Executive Director Andy Varner and Executive Director Shelley Wright with me for a couple different reasons. Shelley leads the oldest ARDR in the state. It was actually established long before the ARDR program, 58 years ago. Andy's 25-year-old ARDR in Southwest, but I selected them because I think they're two of the best success stories of ARDRs in the way that they have active boards that meet regularly, They have plans. They execute their plans through committees. Shelley and I were on the phone the other day, and we were talking about how she gets her work done. She has committees of business owners and residents across Southeast that gather, organize around one issue, and execute the work. And so in that way, it's not just a nonprofit. This nonprofit to my left here is a vehicle to getting work done in this region. That is far, they really leverage the money the state of Alaska is sending their way. And anyway, unsuccessful, Arter would be one that doesn't have a very active board. Maybe the board hasn't met in the past year. Maybe their plan is outdated. Maybe the plan every 2 years looks substantially similar. Like they're not, I mean, it's not just the document, it's the thought behind it and our local leaders thinking about these issues. And
Representative Higgins?
Just a quick question, help me. I think the boards are all voluntary. CEOs, are they paid?
I believe they're all volunteer.
Everyone's volunteer?
Through the chair.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
I have a question about the board makeup, but I will represent Gattis. Hold mine.
CEOs are not.
CEOs are paid.
The board is all volunteer. CEOs are paid staff.
Yeah.
Paid. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was my correction. And since I do have the floor.
Go ahead.
I noticed that I'm a board member of the MATSU, and I'm not anymore. And and it's just ever been so recent, but... Representative Higgins, I was not paid either. No, I was volunteer. But that's how I became a little bit more knowledgeable. So go on.
Yeah, thank you. So that was the 2012 report. I was wondering about the board makeup. They're volunteers. Is there anything regulatory or statutorily that lays out who the membership and the makeup and the kind of people? Because it does, for instance, I did notice some of the boards have a strong influence of the private sector and some do not. So is it just left up to the individual Arter?
It starts there are some guiding state statutes here that said that the board needs to represent the economic and social diversity of the region, and there needs to be some private sector presence there. There's not a percentage the state of Alaska requires. You have to have some private sector support on that board.
Okay, and as a follow-up, you mentioned that you would consider one that might be leaning towards not doing so well or failing as a board that may not really be engaged and moving forward and really working on the plan. What does the state do when you see that happen? Do you intervene?
Thank you for bringing my attention back to that question, Representative Hughes. I've had this conversation before, and I will say that in different venues, the program, meaning the staff, I and Director Palmer, we can only go so far. And when an Arter is reported to us as inactive, I'd look into it. And my first step is, okay, trying to figure out, are you active or are you not? What can I do to help? But you do get to a certain point where we do not distribute Arter program funds to Arters that do not meet their grant agreement requirements, which is to remain active.
So, and not to belabor this, but I do. We want to hold them accountable. So, have there been times where in a particular year a particular Arter has not received funding?
Yes, over the 25 years, there have been years where Arters have not received funding or they have reduced awards, and that's allowed. If an Arter is not performing, we're allowed to reduce the award based on services delivered to the region.
And I had asked earlier, as far as replacing an executive director, does the state get involved with that, or is that left up to the board?
Representative Hughes, no, the state does not get involved with that. I refer all inquiries of that nature to the board. And the executive directors serve at the pleasure of the board of directors. And I, as a program manager and a state employee, don't have that ability to remove a director. And that's when I start asking, though, Where is that board? Have they met? Do they know an Arter exists? who are those names on that piece of paper? What do they know? And I do follow up with boards of directors. I do not like to be an anonymous program director or program manager. And we do this on occasion.
Okay. Did you have any other questions? I have a few more. Is there any, I have another one. I'm full of them. Is there any correlation between the percentage or the amount of private funding coming into Ardor and the success? It seems to me when I look through the report that there was somewhat of a correlation with that. And is that something you look at as an indication that an Ardor is doing what it's supposed to be doing, if it's leveraging private sector funds?
Representative Hughes, I feel a diversified revenue portfolio is symbolic of an organization that is sustainable. Financially, managerially, I think that a more diversified portfolio is a more healthy and robust organization. Those that do not have significant amounts of private sector revenue, though, you need to also ask yourself what's happening out in those regions. What businesses would likely be private sector investors in that organization? Some of these places may or may not have a whole lot of local economic activity. And so I think sometimes to compare Anchorage or Juneau to Bethel or other places is not always appropriate.
Okay. And looking at the different makeup again, has there ever been a discussion of regarding making the grants competitive with among the Ardors, not opening up outside of that, but based on how well they're doing?
Representative Hughes, as I'm thinking through what Alaska statutes and administrative codes say about this, I think the state of Alaska through the department has generally received this appropriation and divided it equally among all the Ardors. As some Ardors have had awards reduced in the past, there have been mini grant opportunities, additional funds available on a competitive basis.
Okay. And Shelley, I'm wondering, just because your organization is the oldest in the state, do you recall at any time, and I know you weren't with it from its founding, but are you aware in its history, was there ever discussion along those lines?
No.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone have any other questions? Okay, if not, then we'll go ahead and Andy or Shelley, whoever is to be next. Thank you, Nicole. And I do want to, I hope you didn't feel like you were in the hot seat, but I do, you know, we want it to be a successful program. And reading through the report, there, I knew that the members might have questions, and I just helped them verbalize them. So thank you very much.
Okay. Again, I'm Shelley Wright. I'm the executive director for Southeast Conference. Southeast Conference was formulated in 1958. It was a group of leaders, community leaders, that were advocating for the Marine Highway System. And once the Marine Highway System was on its way and successful, they grew into the organization that eventually became the Economic Development District through the federal government and the Alaska Development District. I'm going to answer a few of your questions that you asked instead of going on and on about how great we are, because we are pretty great, I will say. Some of the Ardors have a makeup of board because they are economic development districts with the federal government, and there is requirements for us to have a percentage of private and public members on our board through that grant process. So if you notice, some of them are more heavy private than public. That's one of the reasons for that. Southeast Conference is the Economic Development District, and we do have specific requirements for our board and a workforce development representation, private industry, and public. So you'll see that's maybe a little different for some of the boards that aren't through the federal Economic Development District. We have the luxury of being very old, and the people in our
region know us. They know that Southeast Conference, it, through no fault of mine, it was established before I got there. I've only been there for 4 years. Southeast Conference has been the go-to organization in Southeast Alaska for a really long time. So we are very successful because when communities have problems, when communities need things, when they need advocacy or assistance in getting projects done, they come to Southeast Conference because we're a facilitator. We're able to get groups of people together and create an environment for positive things to happen. So we have that luxury in Southeast Alaska. I'll tell you a little bit about our funding. We have the federal funding that's through the Economic Development Administration with the federal government, and we use some of our ARDR grant to match that money. So we use the state money to match the federal money. We are a membership organization, and we rely on our members for a lot of our funding. When we have special projects we want to do, we ask them to support those projects. We were a sponsor of the Marine Highways documentary, and our members paid for that as a member of Southeast Conference. So we rely a lot on our members to pay for a lot of our things. We currently have a state grant to our energy program. We facilitate a lot of the organization through the region as far as developing energy projects, education on energy efficiency, alternative heating resources, things like that. And we are funded through the state to do that particular project. We have an energy coordinator, and the state pays for that energy coordinator. We also have a currently...
Can I ask a question about that? Are you receiving the funds for the energy projects, and then you're administering grants for that, or exactly what are you doing, providing technical assistance? Or
yes, we're providing technical assistance and facilitating the process of energy development. We're not providing grants. We're just... our energy coordinator facilitates most of the meetings that happen within the region as far as getting all of the utilities together. And the Cape Petersburg intertie, we made sure that that EIS was completed and that SEPA and IPEC, the two utilities, formed a memorandum of understanding. We facilitated that process, was able to help Reynolds Creek get a business plan put together and hire a project manager. Those are the kinds of things we do through that energy grant. And then our timbers, we currently have a timber program going with the state money, and we are doing an alternative wildlife strategy to present to the Forest Service for the TLEMP review, Tongass Land Management Plan review. And then we're doing a messaging program, and hopefully we'll be working with Department of Commerce and helping with to get a messaging program for the timber industry.
So I noticed you received, I think it was 600-some thousand for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was for those two items? Okay.
Yeah. And what else? I would just like to mention that currently the ARDR program is not being fully funded. The funding in statute, I believe, is $100,000. Is that right? A year for each ARDR to divide. No, how does it go? Up to $100,000 per ARDR, and it hasn't been fully funded since its inception. And so I'm just putting that little bug in your ear that it is currently not fully funded. And
was that $100,000 established in the 1988, 25 years ago? I'm seeing head shaking yes in the back.
So. I don't know for sure, but I believe that it was. When we were discussing the reauthorization, I think we, didn't we look that up, Jason, and decide that it was? Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Herron.
Yes, to that topic is, so I can't remember the number that's in the, so this year it's 62,000 plus for FY14. What are the ARDRs as individual ARDRs and as a group of ARDRs? How have you promoted and lobbied the governor for an increase?
You want to answer that, Andy, or Jason, actually?
Yeah, I know one particular ARDR met with, I'm sorry, this is Andy Varner with Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. One particular arter met with the governor over the summer, and we as individual arters reached out to our constituents, stakeholders, communities, businesses, to write a lot of letters of support. I think I had about 15 that I gave to Jason, and I hope they made it into the governor's hands. We've alternate routes of communication have really been with the commissioner of the Department of Commerce to try to get that done. We were able to get one meeting with the governor, and that was Copper Valley Development, and I know he communicated our wishes and our concerns and our issues as well to the governor.
So, Madam Chair, so Andy, can you indicate what his response was? To you were essentially seeking an increase in the arter and rather having flat funding. How did he respond?
I wasn't in the room for that meeting. I'll defer to the man that was. I'm assuming at this point, since it didn't make it into his budget, he may have said, that sounds great, but not this year at least.
Can I invite Jason? Jason, you want to come up and state your name for the record and respond to Representative
Thank
Heron's
you very
question?
Much, Representative Hughes and Representative Heron. To answer your question, yes, I'm
up. State your name for the record.
My name is Jason Hoke, Executive Director of Copper Valley Development. I was fortunate enough to have the governor come out for a picnic. I met with him there, talked to him a little bit about it. I then met with him on September 6th of this year, not just that, but on other issues in my region. The governor is fully supportive of the ARDR program. He does recognize the need for increased funding, and he suggested that we go collectively to our representation in the legislature and talk to them about it. $62,000 in rural Alaska doesn't go very far, I can tell you that. And we haven't had an increase in quite a long time. I think it's 8 years now. And so that's what we did. Collectively, we gathered together our stakeholders, community members, got letters, and also went to our representatives with this issue.
So, Madam Chair, you can take away two things from that. First is if sounds like that if the legislature would increase the budget, he would support it. The other way you could look at it is that it's easier for the legislature to defend a budget number that's promoted by the governor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Jason. And Shelley, were you we kind
yes,
of
yes, I think I'm finished. Unless you have any questions about Southeast Conference, I'll
Would like to know a little bit more about what you're doing for the timber industry. If you could elaborate a little bit more on how that $600 plus is being spent to develop that industry.
Currently, the Tongass Land Management Plan is under review, and the wildlife strategy, in our opinion, is not a timber-friendly strategy. It is a strategy that eliminates most of the economic timber through habitat, and we are developing through a contractor an alternative, more timber-friendly wildlife strategy. We're also going to do a threshold analysis to determine what a economic timber industry would entail, the demand or the supply, if you will. And then the messaging campaign is going to be hopefully working with the state of Alaska and other partners, a campaign to convince not only Southeast Alaskans but people outside of Alaska that the Alaska does it right. The timber in Alaska is renewable, it's better timber, and it's kind of we're kind of basing our messaging campaign on the ASME campaign, making it that Alaska is a better product and that we're not destroying the forest.
Thank you. I think ASME's done a very good job, so if you're trying to emulate them, it would be a good thing. I did hear at a Resource Development Council meeting last year at some point the talk about the problem is not having the social license with the timber industry, so I'm glad that you're working on the messaging. That's a shame that it is that's the case, but I'm glad you're addressing it. Thank you, Shelley. Any other questions for Shelley? It is funny calling someone by my own name, so. All right, Andy, we're ready for you.
Thanks, Madam
State
Chair.
Your name, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. This is Andy Varner with the Executive Director of the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. I'm sure time is rapidly proceeding, so I'll be brief because there are a lot of great people in this room that do great work, especially within the confines of this program and the resources that we all have equally. I think some of the outcomes are quite impressive. Just like the ARDA program, my organization, Swampsea, is 25 years old this year, and the Southwest region in this context comprises Kodiak, Bristol Bay, and the Aleutian Pribilof Islands. So it's an area the size of Oregon, but we have two full-time staff in the organization that work. One of them goes and fishes for 2.5 months out of the year, but I feel that's important for him because we're first and foremost a fishing organization. That's really the reason Swampsea came together 25 years ago. It was three diverse regions came together on fisheries issues to show a strong, coherent bond. I think it's in the face of some federal issues, and they've stayed together ever since. But we do the economic development planning for those three regions. Recently, we've signed, just like Shelley was alluding to, we've signed two contracts with the Alaska Energy Authority to do regional energy plans for the Bristol Bay region, the Aleutians region, and we're in talks now for maybe a third contract to do regional energy planning for Kodiak. So that would be a lot of we'll hear it time and time again, energy, the cost of energy, energy development, such a huge issue for rural Alaska. So we feel it's very important to be involved in this process, and we're happy to work with AEA and all of our communities and industries and private entities to make these plans a reality. We signed those contracts a couple months ago, so we're proceeding through the beginning stages of those, but doing some community energy assessments right now. And I will mention four other ARDRs are also doing these regional energy plans. So that's a great responsibility I think we have. We take it very seriously. It is a big issue. And we feel pleased that AEA is working with us on this, another Department of Commerce program that's working with us on this issue. So,
Andy, you said four of the 12 are working on energy plans. Is there an effort to do integration among the plans on a statewide basis, or?
We haven't. That information has not been divulged to us, but I think at the end of this planning process, it would make sense to really find the overlaps and find opportunities to work towards a statewide energy plan. There is an energy policy advisor in AEA. The legislature has passed an energy policy. There's a lot of these big things out there, but really we need something to tie these policies, plans, programs together. I'm hoping that at the end of this is something that will happen because it's definitely needed. We have a lot of energy ideas in Alaska, but really no central overarching policy or plan that's dictating project versus project, apples to apples comparisons, and that's something we really need. And that's something, at least in the three contracts we're going to be working on, we're going to try to do, have a methodology that really gives technically and economically feasible analysis for various projects.
I'm going to expand that out beyond energy, integration across the state between the ARDRs and looking at the big picture in the state and things like infrastructure. Is there a vehicle where you're having some kind of discussion and you provide input to the department on that?
I think we do informally. We meet a couple times a year as ARDRs and discuss a host of issues. I think bulletin number 4 or 5 is going to talk about some of the areas where our ARDR in particular has worked with other ARDRs, because as resources get stretched, we have to do that, and we have to look for ways to be a little more innovative across our own regional borders. So things like infrastructure, we talked today a lot about rail link extensions, for instance, and that's not going to touch my Southwest ARDR, but it will Copper Valley, Fairbanks, Mat-Su, several of those ARDRs. So I think those are working groups at those areas can work in together. Areas like fisheries, we talk amongst other coastal ARDRs about issues like that. When it comes to agriculture and food, we've worked with Copper Valley Development Association on a greenhouse feasibility for rural Alaska. with Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. We went with them on a tour of the Kodiak Launch Complex. The launch complex is in Southwest Alaska, but a lot of suppliers and businesses that are interested in getting a piece of that, you know, the business out of there are located in Anchorage and South Central Alaska. So we've been able to partner with you know, some different, when there was a hay crisis in the lower 48, I remember contacting Marty and saying, are there some hay farmers? I think they're probably maybe in this room. And a certain name came up. That is there a way we could find a way to backhaul a product to the lower 48 when the rest of the country is scorched and we have an abundance of hay here? So we're trying to think across our little regions more and more, really for the, not only for the benefit of the state, but the benefit for our regions too. Maybe there are business opportunities across borders. And we're finding that. It's something that I think it's been more of a focus the last few years. And I think it's, you know, very, very beneficial for.
Well, it sounds to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the integration occurs when a need arises and it's done in a more informal kind of way. So there's no formal process or vehicle where it's happening and occurring regularly. And so your plans are not integrated, right? We don't have a statewide plan per se. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that's kind of another issue that the ARDRs are involved with and working towards. So we've gotten some assistance. This is the group, Alaska Partnership for Economic Development, is trying to find a way to put an economic development plan together for the state of Alaska. But it's separate from the ARDR process, but we're all definitely involved in that.
And do you think that's a missing link that for you? I would think something, for instance, shipping, integrating that. I mean, that impacts all of us, the movement of things around the state. Do you see that that will make your job easier if we had something that was more integrated and a plan where we move forward on a statewide basis with infrastructure and things like that?
I'm seeing an omnibus bill forming right now. Yeah, I think it would, because when we look at shipping and taking advantage of Arctic opportunities, again, there's a lot of groups looking at it, just like energy, and we have a lot of ideas. Our group, we have sort of big ideas for what the solutions could be for capturing some of the vessel traffic, transshipment opportunities, Arctic support industries, and there's probably five or six other communities along the western coast of Alaska also looking at it. So if we could have a way to help determine which areas and which geographies this makes sense for, maybe we could all benefit from that. Think, you know, for instance, the West Coast, this is not going to work out exactly right in this area, but out here in Unimak Pass, where 3,000 vessels traverse through out in the Aleutians, this would make a lot more sense. However, you, Western Alaska area, this is something you could specialize, Coast Guard refuge, mooring, things like that. But they're really, I know it's something that the Northern Waters Task Force and the Arctic Caucus are going to have to grapple with. So amongst many other things, that will be another interesting piece this session, I think, as that conversation goes forward.
I have another question, and I'm not sure you can all, whoever wants to respond may. I noticed as I was going through the report, and I know, you know, one size does not fit all as far as regions, but some of the regions had a more local focus, helping small local businesses get their footing, and other areas were into inviting business from outside, and as you mentioned, Bill Poff and the Anchorage Economic Development Council. So one of the things that really promotes growth is to bring that outside, or what they call primary basic dollars, into the state. Is that a focus of either of your ARDRs, and how does that play into what all the ARDRs are seeking to do? Is that something that you all talk about, or is that left up to the individual boards? Just talk about that a little bit.
I'll take a quick shot. Yeah, that's something I had outlined in here. I think as artists, we have to think small in certain areas and think big, too. Our organization, because we represent such a large region, and it's $1,200 to fly from just Anchorage to Adak, let alone if you want to fly from Kodiak to Anchorage to Adak. It's a very large region to cover, so a lot of times we end up thinking a little bit bigger. We're happy to work with any small business, a fisherman who's having problems getting a permit or quota, to work with them, or at least defer them to, because there are a lot of entities that do help small businesses too. We're happy to do that, plan small business workshops. But I think another part of our job, and something our board directs us to do, is look at bigger picture things like transshipment in the Aleutians, like looking at partnering opportunities between CDQs, community development quota entities. There are three in our region. One, for instance, is looking at bringing some of their assets and basing them in Seward. Something we're investigating, can we do something like that in another part of Alaska, like Kodiak, for instance, a large fishing community, a lot of infrastructure. Can we capture more of our fisheries dollars in the state and keep them in Alaska? So looking at some of those big picture issues, regional energy plans, those are another big picture. So I think just because of the context and the makeup of our organization, our board wants us to think a little bit bigger. But for instance, AEDC is going to concentrate a lot within their own borders. So I think it is different, just as you were saying, in Southeast conferences.
Shelley, did you have any comment along those lines?
Well, I would just say that in Southeast Alaska, as long as I've been there, it's certainly been board-driven and membership-driven. We have a membership of each municipality, and we have 174 members and their municipalities, organizations, small businesses, individuals. And we are kind of driven by what our members would like us to be involved with. And with the economy in Southeast Alaska and the energy costs in Southeast Alaska, our board and myself have actually been trying to encourage our organization to think local and plan regional, and really we have a few bigger companies in Southeast Alaska that are looking statewide. Alaska Ship and Dry Dock is certainly wanting to get, you know, into the statewide maritime industry, but I think we want to be part of the state. We want to have our value. We understand that we do have value within the state, but we're so concentrated right now in building our infrastructure, getting our energy costs down, that we tend to look local and think regional.
Okay, thank you. We're getting really close on time, but I want to give a few minutes here at the end for any members, if they had a question of any of the Arters that are in the audience. Before you got here, Rep. Perrin, we had those in the audience introduce themselves. From all 12 Arters are represented, so if anyone has a question for any of them, we'll invite them up to the table. So anyone? Well, I guess you're all off the hook. So thank you very much. It was a good presentation. Appreciate
thank
your
you.
Preparation, your time to present to us today. And at this time, Bill Jeffress, who is the chairman of Alaska Minerals Commission.
Might want to
come on.
Let people get out.
I think it's usually an empty room because there's almost all harder people.
Yeah.
Private sector computer more in the state of Alaska, really one quarter. There's only three entities here that actually got more money from the private sector than us. Yeah, the total percentage of the state contributed way more than they even close to that.
Yeah, it's we're up for reauthorization, and so these are some of those hard questions we're going to have to ask.
Yeah.
I think the chair sort of politely asked some hard questions.
Yeah,
good
job. Excellent, thank you. This wasn't the one sitting there. That was a different Jason, I just realized.
Jason Hoke? He's the one who had spoken to the governor.
Oh, but I thought... Oh, I thought he was from that they were now on the way out. This is the Welcome, gentlemen. We're getting a three-for-one bargain here. I just thought we were getting Jeff, so I'll let you introduce yourselves and get on. So state your name for the record, please, whoever's beginning.
My name is Bill Jeffers. Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for asking us to give this presentation. I'm the chair of the Alaska Minerals Commission. To my right is Greg Beischer. He's also a member of the commission. To my left, Steve Tremble. We have other members of the commission with Lance Miller, Rob Rutherford, Charlotte McKay, and Carl Hahnemann. And what I'd like to do is go through our report briefly, each of the main topics, five main topics that we have. When I finish that, if there are any questions, we can have individuals from the commission address those if you have questions. The commission is an organization that was created by the legislature, and our charter is to report to the legislature and to the governor on ways to mitigate potential impacts that would affect mineral development in Alaska. And this annual report fulfills that mandate. The commission members are appointed by the governor, the president of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House. The current members, we have a pretty broad-based diversity. We represent exploration, hard rock mining, coal mining, all facets of basically the industry, from grassroots all the way to development, operation, closure, and post-closure. So we've got a good expertise of members that sit on the commission. And then what we also do is take input from the resource agencies and the university, and basically open our doors to any input from any organization that has concerns or issues with mineral development.
I noticed that your authorization is about to expire, and I do believe I saw a bill that would extend that. Is that correct. Representative Sadler's?
Correct.
And
we have to extend that to a 10-year sunset date.
Thank you.
Our members, the ones I introduced, are on the board there. And what I'd like to say also is the commission is supported by DCCED. Excuse me, ma'am. And it's the support that we've been given has been tremendous. It's an all-volunteer board, so a lot of the everyday work that goes on in preparing the report and everything is supported by DCCED, and they have a wonderful staff. I think one of the things that we're mandated to do is identify issues that affect potential resource development, and especially mineral development. But one of the things that we also like to do is give accolades to the administration and to the legislature when they've taken our recommendations in the past and moved forward. I think we're on a very positive track. The issues that we've identified this year are still critical in sending a message to the industry that Alaska is open for business. And this is the road that we're trying to continue to move, and we want to keep the state of Alaska on the right course. These are the main items that the commission has identified this year. It's tax climate, and this is just like the oil industry, tax climate for the mineral industry. It tells the investors from outside whether or not we're open for business. We also understand at the same time with development, there's impacts. And so if there's revenues raised from mineral development, we also see a need for revenue sharing on some of the communities that are impacted. Transportation and infrastructure.
Before you go on to that number two, number one, is on your action item, is there any bill that is in the works for that?
No, there is not.
Okay.
And I should have qualified, part of our mission is it's not written in the legislation, but we take it upon ourselves not to practice law or to legislate. We make recommendations, identify issues, and make recommendations.
Representative Gaddis?
since that's what you like to do is make recommendations, I can't help but to piggyback onto the tax climate issue. What is the issue that you might recommend specifically?
There's a mining license tax that's imposed on the industry that's producing the producing mines. There are other fees that are also paid by the industry for claim rental, royalties, lease payments. And just like the fishing tax, there could be a potential to take a portion of that tax to give it back to the local communities that are impacted by either exploration activities or some type of mining activity or development.
And have local communities come to you, or is this something that the idea was from the commission itself?
It's a combination of our experiences in the industry as being involved, and also one would be the city of Nome with the big resurgence of offshore mining and prospecting. The city of Nome has very defined small boundaries, but a lot of mining activity is occurring outside, but since Nome is the hub for the Seward Peninsula, a lot of the impacts are occurring right in the city.
Do you know that with the fees and the license, the mineral license fees being collected, what is the total amount that's coming into the state from all these things that, you know, what is the pie that comes in that maybe a piece could be given to the local communities?
Madam Chair, I don't have that number. We would have to rely on the Department of Revenue. There's been a real resurgence of exploration activities and small placer mining activity over the last couple of years, and I know that number has gone up.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gaddis?
If we could go back one slide, I'm not sure that, and I might have been going to a different direction that you had. What I'm hearing you say is in regards to the tax climate, what you're really saying is to take those taxes in and create a revenue sharing. Mm-hmm. So what I thought originally when I heard you say it, I was thinking, if you will, a tax reform for actually the miners and that type thing, and that's not what I heard you say, correct?
Representative Gaddis, through the chair, no, that is not.
Okay, I'm just trying to follow, no worries, thanks.
Good question, thanks.
The next one is the transportation infrastructure. We support what the governor is doing with strategic and critical metals, but in order to get to these strategic and critical metals, we need infrastructure. And this isn't just roads, this is energy corridors. There's a lot of known deposits in Alaska that would have been developed years ago if they were in the lower 48, but without the infrastructure in place, it's just economically a killer for any type of large investment. In Representative Heron's area, there's the Donlin Creek project. That project has been studied in depth since 1996, and they just moved into permitting this past July. So it takes a long time, and part of the hurdles that they have with all of these projects is how do you support the mine, make it economic, and that's the infrastructure.
I don't see rail mentioned on there. How does the commission feel about more rail in Alaska?
We are supportive of all options and opportunities, and I think with the rail extension from North Pole to Fort Greeley, there's more opportunities there for getting goods and services, and especially the consumable products, to the mining operations. It'll make it more economical.
And what about the rail extension down in Mat-Su? Is that something that you all support? I think those of us from Mat-Su feel like that could impact the state on a statewide basis as far as moving things related to mining, including equipment.
Madam Chair, I think that rail extension to Port McKenzie is probably one of the most forward-thinking ideas that's come up in a long time. Just the fact that this is in the works, it's not only the commodities from the Mat-Su, but coal, potential development there, and providing additional infrastructure for a deep water port that's would be readily accessible with the development of that.
Representative Gaddis?
And so just a comment. Under your roads to resources, what you really meant was roads and rails to resources?
Railroads to resources.
You bet. Thanks.
Representative Gaddis through the chair, exactly.
Thanks.
Good. Yeah, you might want to fix that slide before you use it again. Thank you.
Education, this is one of the priorities that we've had out for a long time. We saw some real issues with the university. Alaska has real potential to being the leader in producing mine engineers and professionals that support the mining industry. At this time, Alaska is becoming known, renowned throughout the country as one of the few mining schools, and we have the potential of moving right to the front of the pack on this. The president of the university, Gamble, saw that there was some disconnect between the campuses, and he is, with the recommendations that we provided last year in our report, he has really stepped up to the plate and created this Consolidated Alaska Minerals Initiative, where he has the different programs, mineral development programs, for the three different campuses actually communicating and working to work closer, and there more synergy between those. We know that there's an issue that he's also working on accepting credits from one college to the next. It seems like all three campuses were certified independently and separately, and this is an ongoing problem, not just with the mineral education, but with all facets of the university. And he has really stepped up to the plate, and we'd like to commend him for that. We've got a ways to go, and a couple of, in fact, the governor asked if we have a date, if anybody set a date on when this is going to come to fruition. And that's one of the questions we'll ask the President Gamble next time we are able to communicate with him. The other point is the education, the Alaska Resource Education Fund. You just heard from Artos. I mean, if you want a social license, we have to educate our young people and our adults on the importance of resource development, and especially in our industry, mineral development. You just look around this room, and there's nothing that doesn't come from mining or timber or resource development. And so it's this is something that we urge the legislature to continue the current level of funding for the Alaska Resource Education, but also their innovation of this Google Earth Minerals curriculum. As we know, all the young people are glued to the electronics, and this is an interactive program that is actually, it's not only engaging for the kids, it's engaging for the adults to see where minerals come from, where the occurrences are. Alaska is a great place, even with the free Google Earth that's out there, you can explore Alaska, but this Google Earth Minerals curriculum is a kind of state of the art, and it's something that can all the schools in Alaska could benefit from. We support the Alaska Resource Education asking for an additional $100,000 for funding and to kick this part of the curriculum off and get it going. Federal intervention, this is a hot topic throughout Alaska. We just gave a couple of examples in our report, but the main one is EPA's overreach. Not only into the state of Alaska's sovereignty, but their overreach into other state or other federal agencies' authority. Interjecting their system has complicated permitting by other federal agencies, and it complicates the integrity of the Alaska process and our ability to develop our resources. The other is the Emission Control Act that affects Southeast and all the way up to the Kenai Peninsula and Anchorage. And this is based on unscientific, there's no science based on it. And the EPA, the individuals that we've talked to from the administration say it's not to expose populations. The Great Lakes are exempt from this. I guess the people in Chicago aren't as important as we are up here. But these are just two examples of how we feel that the state is on the right course and the governor challenging and pushing back on this federal unwarranted federal intervention.
Representative Higgins?
Just to let the board know, I'm also a minor, too. So the third entity you're not talking about is MSHA. And I say that, not that I don't believe in safety, because I do, but what their overreach is on the small mom-and-pop operation, because MSHA does not recognize anything against any mind. They consider them all the same. So if you have a two-man operation just doing a, you know, a small little thing, they got to have, just to give an example, they have to have an office or else they're going to get fined. And that's ridiculous. And we need to look at that and figure out how we can do it, because there are seven major mines in the state of Alaska, but there's hundreds of mom-and-pops that are out there working. And we have to do something for them. And that's an important overreach of federal regulation right there. And we got to do something. Not that I'm saying we got to get rid of safety, because we need safety, but there's got to be something we can look at.
Thank you. Comment?
Representative Higgins, through the chair, this is an issue that's paramount, and I'm glad to see that there's other representatives from the other body that have mentioned to us that they were also looking not only at 404 primacy, but to see what avenues or venues there are to assume primacy over MSHA in the state and implementing that. I'm not quite sure if that's going to be introduced this year, but I'm just glad that the legislator has people that are looking into that.
Thank you, Representative Herring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess in full disclosure, I'm a gold miner as well. I've got 8 mining claims on the Kuskokwim. But I guess what I appreciate is a thank you and Steve and Greg to stopping by yesterday and visiting with me. But it's about federal overreach. And so Steve has been appointed to the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission by the presiding officers. And so we look forward to working, the commission and the legislature looks forward to working with you on recommending to the federal government that we need to be full partners in decisions about Alaska and Arctic policy. Thank you.
We have just a few more minutes, so just so you're aware.
The Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, I see the plaque up and the mission statement up there for DGGS. One of the things that the state of Alaska lacks that a lot of other countries and entities, territories, states have is a geological material center where people can look at core from mining and from petroleum. There's been a number of discoveries that have come after the core has been put into the repository where other people have come back and identified minerals that the original drillers or the original exploration hadn't looked at. Right now, the DGGS Material Center is in Connex boxes in Eagle River. It gets 400 to 500 visitors a year. If you want to do it in the wintertime, you better dress real warm and bring your lantern and flashlight, because that's how you have to view it. And we commend the administration. We understand that they have opened up negotiations on a building in Anchorage to house the Material Center, and it's the early stages of the negotiations, so we just commend them for stepping up to the plate and looking and potentially finding a facility that could be retrofitted to house this material and make it available to potential investors in Alaska.
I toured the Material Center this fall, and they were very strategic how the final, right before the end of the tour, was to take me into one of the units that was one where they lost a lot of material because of the moisture, and then another one that was falling apart and about to go there. So very aware of that. Is there anything in the governor's budget to address that their need for a building?
Yes, there is.
Okay, thank you.
The geological and geophysical mapping, this is part of DGGS's mission. And unfortunately, what we've seen with the sustained high metal prices, a lot of the salaries for the individuals in DGS have not kept pace. And some of the individuals that have left over the last year have doubled their salary going to work in Alaska for other companies, for private companies. And we just ask that the classification system for employees be looked at, much like oil and gas, Division of Oil and Gas. There may be opportunities to provide for exempt or partially exempt positions to keep some of these talented people. They're the ones that prepare some of the maps and identify some of the potentially mineral-rich areas. And this is one of the first stops that exploration companies make, is looking at the information that's produced and prepared by DGGS.
Again, do you know, does the governor's budget address the need, for the salary need? Do you know offhand?
I'm not sure offhand. I'm
okay.
Sorry, Madam Chair. This is just a quick overview of the existing properties in operation, and then the advanced development projects, and then advanced exploration. And as big as the state of Alaska is, we probably should have used smaller print, because there's a lot of distance between as far and few in between these different deposits. And we've got some. You can see where the lack of infrastructure really plays a critical role on how we do our exploration and potential development and actually promote investment in the state of Alaska.
I have said before, it's somewhat of a pun, that we've barely tapped the surface in mining. If you, I know this might be kind of a hard question, but if you could put a figure to it, as far as the percentage that we've tapped of what we have in our state, what kind of range would you say as far as?
You know, I could answer that.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
Yeah, it's Greg Beischer. Yeah, I've looked at this a lot as an exploration geologist. And so if you look at a mineral occurrence map of British Columbia, you'll see that per square kilometer, square mile, there's a much higher density of mineral deposits plotted on the maps. And the reason is not geological. The same geology comes through to Alaska, so there should be the same relative density of mineral occurrences, but there's not. And it's simply because we haven't looked long enough and hard enough, because it's a harder place to look. It's less accessible. It's tougher country. And so we just haven't discovered them yet. We're going to discover a lot more mineral occurrences, and we're going to discover a lot more mines given the time.
So based on that, could you estimate some kind of a range of where we might be?
8 to 10 times more mines will be discovered.
Okay, thank you. And we're about out of time. Are you? Looks like that's the final. It's a nice slide with the flag. And Steve, did you have any comments?
No additional comments, Madam Chair. Thank you for your
thank
time
you.
Today.
Any questions from members of the committee? We really thank you, and I appreciate this report, because it tells exactly, you know, just doesn't explain what the issues are and the challenges, but actually those action steps are very, very helpful and very readable document, too. So excellent. Thank you for coming and speaking with us. We want to do what we can to ensure that the mining industry does not have barriers to hold it back. And so thank you very much, gentlemen. And with that, we're about on our time, so our next meeting is Thursday. We'll be right here, same place, same time, and we'll be hearing from DCCED regarding tourism and film programs. And so with that, it is 12:44. The meeting is adjourned.